The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, welcome back. We're going to learn something very unsettling this first hour as we begin a conversation with Karen Stewart. Karen Stewart is a whistleblower who had a career with the NSA, 28 years, and she found something that wasn't right and reported it to the proper channels. And we're going to hear a story that you probably won't believe. If you look under Google search engine results for whistleblowers, many of you will find things that just aren't being talked about. Let me just read some of the Google headers on these stories. They're all links. Six brave government whistleblowers charged under the Espionage Act by the Obama administration. Obama's war on whistleblowers leaves administration insiders untouched, but lower-level employees go to jail. CNN's Tapper, Obama has used the Espionage Act more than all previous presidents. On leak prosecutions, Obama takes it to 11, or should we say 526 whistleblowers. Mouths wide shut, Obama's war on whistleblowers. Big article on Counterpunch there. Mother Jones, Obama's war on whistleblowers. Here's the last one I'll do. Obama has sentenced whistleblowers to 31 times the jail time of all presidents together in American history. So, what's the deal? In many cases, whistleblowers are answering the highest call of patriotic Americans. They've seen corruption, they've seen wrongdoing, they've seen criminal behavior, and they want people to know. Now, why has Obama tried to crush the life out of so many people who have simply tried to bring forward through correct channels, as I said, in many cases? They don't go straight to the press. And they get smashed. What's going on? Why is this happening? We're going to find out at least one or two of the answers to that question. There are probably many. Karen Stewart, welcome to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Rentz, for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, indeed. This whole war on whistleblowers, I guess Obama pretty much put the pedal to the metal about 8 years ago. A lot of good people have gone to prison. But there are a lot of others who didn't go to prison, didn't get jail time, weren't necessarily put on trial, but who are suffering mightily, some to the extent that they've actually committed suicide. They're being punished. They're being abused. The term is gang stalking. That's for openers, but it gets worse than that. Let's go back to the beginning here. I'm just asking you, how did you get involved with the NSA? That's a pretty heady organization to land in. How'd you get in there? 28 years.
Well, it is. My father was Air Force Intelligence, and I developed an interest in foreign languages. I was fascinated with how they were constructed and spoken, and I ended up studying multiple foreign languages and then seeking out a means by which to use this interest and grow. And an uncle who also was in Air Force Intelligence suggested that I apply to the National Security Agency, which I did, and I was accepted for employment in 1982. I passed all of their rigorous background checks, intelligence tests, IQ, psychological tests, no criminal record whatsoever, et cetera, and began my career with them in 1982.
You were, as they say, a nugget for them. You were a prodigy. You had it all. You had a clean record, which is becoming harder to find these days. But they must have been very happy with you in the beginning.
Well, actually, during one of my initial interviews, the woman who was interviewing me said to me, "We know people your age have all done drugs, you know, but if you just tell us that you won't do them while you work for us, then it'll be okay. You just sign a contract saying you'll never do it." And I said, "No problem. I've never done it. I don't smoke, I don't drink, and I've never experimented with drugs." Mm-hmm. And she essentially called me a liar and said, "Well, you're going to polygraph next, and we'll just see about that." And I passed with flying colors, and she had to eat her words.
Oh, that's funny. I guess it's funny. What happens if you sign the contract? Is that the end of it, or is that a trick?
As far as I know, it's just admitting that you did this or that that they don't like and that you won't do it again, or they can fire you. If they find even that you smoke one joint of marijuana on a weekend, they can fire you if you promise to never do that.
I see.
So I think that's kind of an insurance policy. Because they were just not finding people who were clean anymore.
Right. That's what I said. I understand that. Okay. In the NSA, are you given, I guess, a security clearance right away of some level, and then you work your way up? Is that how it goes?
Well, within a year, they were doing extensive background checks, and they were giving on-the-job training or pre-job training. So within that year, you basically had your background thoroughly vetted, and every so often they found something in somebody's background, and they told them, "Thanks, but no thanks, you're gone." But there was no problem for me whatsoever. So by the second year I was working for them, I was on the job, and I had actually attained pretty much a top secret clearance at that point because of the area that they wanted me to go into.
Okay, which was?
I would hesitate to say, but
I don't need details. Just generally speaking, if you want to just push it into a whatever basket you want, just
Russian military.
Fine, that's all we need. No problem.
Okay.
The idea here is that the NSA, no such agency, has its tentacles everywhere on the planet, virtually, as I understand it. I mean, there's nothing that will elude their interest. If they want something, they're going to get in there. Is that pretty well true?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that I learned when I was working there that I was rather shocked by was when I was speaking to someone and they said that NSA has a mole in the office of every single senator and congressman that they're interested in.
Well, there you go. Not to mention the CIA having a mole in every major newspaper, radio and television network station. They control it. They don't even need that many people anymore. I think the control now is refined. This goes back to Operation Northwoods in the 1950s when the CIA bragged that they could put any story they want in any major newspaper in a matter of a couple of hours or less. And so that was before the age of electronics. Let me get to the punchline here. The amount of control and penetration and knowledge that the NSA and the CIA have exerted over this culture and our society would probably be unbelievable to most people. Is that fair?
I think you would probably be right, and people would be horrifically alarmed, and they need to be.
Absolutely. That's what I've been doing here for almost 24 years now, trying to help people understand that the world around them is not what they see. It's all an issue of a perception game. And if people think and believe what they're seeing is real and it works for them, and most people, they don't push it. But it's a whole different thing. When you pull that curtain back and look behind, friends, what you see back there is often horrifying. It's that grim. Now, I'm not saying all these people in the NSA are killers and perverts, but they get into everything and know everything about everyone, and the amount of influence that they can exert is probably astonishing. It is said, Karen, that we used to joke about the Clintons and how they had something on God knows how many people, and that was their insurance. Well, these agencies have basically everything on everyone that would be of interest to them. They've vetted you, but they've got it.
Yeah. Well, post 9/11 especially was bad. And after that, I would say that most people probably don't know that the National Security Agency's charter originally said that they were supposed to only gather information and communications, et cetera, on foreigners on foreign soil. Once a person, let's say you've got somebody who's an agent or a terrorist in Germany, and that person is may or may not be a German citizen, may be an other citizen, but once they come to the United States, the NSA has got to turn over that person's travel and observation to the FBI because they are on American soil, and that was a no-no for NSA. Also, if you had somebody overseas who was talking to a second person, the first person you knew was a bad guy, the second person you didn't know and you assumed was a bad guy, but you find out it's George Smith and he's just doing a regular business deal, there's nothing nefarious about it, you've got to stop listening to George Smith's side of the conversation. And also, if George Smith happens to be a terrorist, then you have to inform the FBI, and they have to take over because NSA has no jurisdiction over Americans, or they didn't until 9/11.
That's right, not formally. Now I would suggest, just from my chair, there are probably no boundaries to the NSA and their surveillance anymore. They do what they want.
I would say not. And what they're doing is they're using basically the same type of spy technology and spy protocol on Americans that they were only supposed to use on foreigners overseas. But the problem is they're not getting caught. They're not getting caught, so they're doing it anyway.
Well, who's to hold them accountable, Karen, when they have so much on everybody else anyway? The person catching them certainly has issues in their past, and the NSA could use that, could it not, easily to turn them around.
Well, I have called and actually asked this of several different agencies, and I get the response, the FBI, but then I happen to know that the FBI pretty much does anything that NSA tells it to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there is no one.
And then we have, right. And then we got the DOJ, which is pretty much a joke, the Department of Jokes now. What an obscenity that has turned into.
It absolutely has.
I don't know how we can, and I've tried to do this for a long time, educate Americans about the nation, the republic that they live in. Actually, it's a corporatocracy. It's a big corporation. It's a big company. The company they live in. What do Americans need to know? What do they really need to know about all this? Or are most Americans just looked upon, as Henry Kissinger once said, useless eaters?
Oh, geez, that's horrible. I would say if I were cut off in a minute or two, the one thing that I would like to tell people is that the Homeland Security Network is something of an obscene joke. You're being played for fools. Basically, there are thousands upon thousands of people on the terrorist watch list who are only there to bloat the list and to make you think that you're in danger. And under Bush, the FBI went to every single state it could and started something with their law enforcement agencies, a vigilante civilian group. They're supposed to be hyper-patriots. Well, they're not hyper-patriots. They're being played for fools. They're being paid to stalk and harass people they are told are threats or terrorists. And in the vast majority of cases, these people are innocent, randomly chosen people to be thrown on the terrorist watch list. And very often they're whistleblowers or somebody, someone powerful has a personal vendetta against. And so these InfraGuard and other types of, excuse me for saying this, like the Soviets used to call the peasants, useful idiots, are helping destroy the lives of patriots and some of the nicest people and best people that we have.
And yet these people you're describing, unless they're mentally imbalanced, and there probably are some of those, actually think that they are being patriotic. That's the trick, correct?
Well, it is. And if you think about common sense, these people are violating these other people's rights, the victims' rights. There's no Fourth Amendment. They're being secretly accused of something by the government without any witnesses. And then they're having a non-deputized, non-legal, non-law enforcement group of civilian vigilante fascists stalk, harass, and vandalize them. These people get thrown out of their apartments. They lose their jobs. They get blackballed from having any kind of job. I spoke to a man who lives on a nature path between a couple of Florida cities. He comes into town to get food stamps, and then he goes back and he camps out there. He says when he comes into each little town along the path, police find him and spit on him.
I mean, it's that bad. That Karen, that is over the top crazy. That's really bad.
It is, but I believe him. I believe him from what I have experienced and what from speaking to 100 people.
Yeah.
This is typical because they have somehow created the federal government, and this is all for money. This is not for anybody.
It's a paid militia of thugs, is what you're telling me, operating under the guise of patriotic duty, privilege, and opportunity. They want to serve their country, but they get paid, and they'll do anything they're told to without regard for morals or anything that we would normally use as parameters and boundaries. They just have none. This national organization of vigilante thugs was again created by Bush after 9/11, I guess. How many people? Tens of thousands?
At least. I mean, if you think about each person who is targeted and harassed day in, day out.
Yeah.
And I don't know of anybody who's really gotten out of the program, so there are people who make their living doing this. Now, the first layer of people that they call in would be InfraGuard or somebody who fools himself or herself into thinking that somehow denying somebody their Fourth Amendment rights
is good for the nation.
I gotcha. It's good for the nation, you know. But then when they start getting into dog poisoning, pet mutilation, car vandalism, hit and runs,
well, that's why I said earlier that some of them are mentally unbalanced. They're crazy.
Well, you know, they do drill down into a criminal class. Now, the InfraGuard, to some degree, think they're just following. And there are two sets of people in InfraGuard. They will assign somebody. Let's say you've got 15 people assigned to you per day to follow you around into stores, all around town by car. And then those people are reporting your every whereabouts. So they're saying, oh, you know, she bought eggs. Oh, she bought a wrench. And they're calling it into a central location. But that you've also got people who are sitting around basically minding their own business. But if they happen to see you, then they grab their phone and go to a certain social network where they scroll through pictures and pictures of people, and then they report, oh, here's the person, here's Jim Smith, he's on this list. I'm going to text in and say he's at this doctor's office, it's 3:45, I'm at Dr. Jones's office, and I'll get $100. And
wow.
I have actually approached these people and said, oh, you know, what are you doing? You know, are you getting paid to do this? And one gentleman, and I use that term loosely, told me, he was bragging to me, he said, yes, well, the FDLE recruits us, and basically, and that was the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, recruits us, and then if we happen to see a targeted person, and he nodded toward me, he said, we call in their location and their time, and we get $100 on their account.
Wow.
On our count. And I said, wow. Do people care that a lot, if not all, of the people who are targeted are innocent people, and they have not been accused of any real crime? It's fabricated just to bloat the numbers of people on a terrorist watch list. And he smiled. He said, nobody cares. It's money.
Well, I'm not surprised to hear that. This whole national organization, you're calling it InfraGuard. It's a bogus patriot militia that goes far beyond simple surveilling of people. It harms them. It breaks into their homes. And Karen Stewart is a victim. We'll call this, that's what's called gang stalking, okay? A gang of people, maybe 15 or 20 in her immediate community, in her town, will watch her or others, and she has never been formally charged with anything in a court of law about this. Many aren't. They're just doing what they think is the right thing to do, truly the right thing to do for the country. Now, let me go back a little bit. You've just said so much that is crucial to people understanding here what they're in. We're not in a free society. We are living in a hamster cage. We're fed and watered and watched and given a wheel to run on, and that's about it. We got 100 million people out of work now. They're out of the job market. They've got no jobs. I don't suppose you're holding your breath over Donald Trump and his plans to roll all this back, but you know, any progress in that regard would be certainly appreciated by those who are out of luck, shall we say. Let me go back to the DHS. A fraud organization, out of control, with 4.5 billion rounds of ammunition, much of it hollow point ammunition that they try to tell us is for target practice, which it is not. It's for target elimination, as in murder. They're expecting big trouble. Now, they build these lists, no-fly lists, terror watch lists, with a lot of people who are completely innocent. They have no reason to be on that list whatsoever. And we've seen stories about people on the no-fly list that shouldn't be there. Good luck getting off the list. It's almost impossible. This is all a contrived bureaucracy to keep the DHF feeding at the trough, engorging itself with tax dollars or other dollars that are created out of thin air. And these people are psychopaths, some of them. They have to be.
I would agree with your assessment. In fact, if you read about the Department of Homeland Security, you will find something shocking. They went to experts to help them design the operations of Department of Homeland Security. And these experts, some of them, one at least was from the KGB, and another one was from the old East German secret police.
The Stasi.
Yes, the Stasi. And that is very important because there was something that the Stasi did to their own people, their own dissidents, in the 1980s. It was psychological warfare, and the German word for it is Versetzung. And it's also called Versetzen, which is the verb. But Versetzen means decomposition. And what does it mean? It means that you take every aspect of the targeted person's life, and in their respect it was a dissident, you take every part of that person's life and you destroy it. You destroy their job, their ability to make money. You destroy their relationship. You destroy their health. You destroy their mental health, you destroy their reputation, and what the goal was to force this dissident into a position of either dying and starving on the street with nobody helping him or her, or committing suicide.
Now, all right, let me ask you to hold that thought, Karen. I have to take a short break. But please, dear friends, listen carefully to what you're hearing and listen to this program again. I'll rerun it, but if you've got the archives, get this program and understand, you are not living in the land of the free and the home of the brave at all. Be right back with Karen Stewart. Okay, and welcome back. Talking to Karen Stewart. We're setting the stage here for just an extraordinary story. I've done many programs on gang stalking over the years, and that's just the lower half of the dual approach to destroying people. That can do plenty in and of itself, but there are other things we're going to get to as well. This story is not unique? Oh, it's unique in its own way, but there are tens of thousands of people who have been targeted, who are being targeted right now as we speak, who are having their lives ruined, destroyed, and many will die. That's the kind of country we live in. This secret national patriot militia, and I use that with quotations around it, of thugs and ultimately accessories to murder and worse, perhaps, are also on my mind as being certainly to some degree, Karen, involved with satanic ritual abuse and satanic practices. I think there's evil now penetrating virtually everything in the control matrix in which we live. And that evil is often called satanic. Am I off base with that?
You know, I have heard this from various people, and the interesting thing to me is that my attack basically came from NSA security, and another woman who was attacked and her career destroyed was telling me that the head of NSA security operations had all kinds of reproductions of paintings of Dante's Inferno, and she suspected he himself was a Satanist.
Well, then you go. You look at Tony Podesta, and I've got pictures up of the art, so-called artworks, hanging on his walls at home. Teenagers, preteens, children, horrible stuff. And I think that there's this element, we can call it pedophilia, but it's far beyond that, that permeates all major Western governments and maybe all governments in the world. I don't know. There is an essence, an element of evil on this planet, satanic evil that can't be denied but hides, and many people will never understand it. And that's as it should be, I guess. They're probably better off. But I never trust anyone anymore at higher levels of so-called public service or public office. It just doesn't work. I don't care what country I'm talking about. They're all in it, and that darkness permeates the whole country, every town, every city. In your town, there'll be somebody in your town of influence who's involved with the cult, and that's what I've been told for years by people who have studied this, so that's another part of it. Yours seems to have been an administrative-induced gang stalking and an effort to destroy you from within. You weren't exposed to the cult aspect of it. Let's go ahead and carry the story forward. When you were working, 28 years is a long time. Now, this trouble you had began several years, I guess, before you left. Was your career good? Were you were being promoted quickly, you said? You got, after 2 years, one of the highest security clearances. What was it like working all those years?
Well, everything went, as far as I was concerned, pretty normally. I mean, promotions were hard to come by, and so the management tended to use promotions to award friends and people like that, so they weren't always fair with promotions.
Same old stuff. Not what you know, it's who you know.
Exactly. So at a certain point in time, I transferred to the Weapons and Space Directorate, and spent several years working there. And just before the invasion of Iraq, I was assigned to do some investigation in a certain area, and I found a hidden danger that the American military and the government had not known about. And the papers described it basically as a private Russian company selling GPS jammers that were specific to our weapons to Iraq before the invasion. Well, this was quite alarming. So I started doing a series of reports, and strangely enough, the head of Weapons and Space basically said, I don't want you to do those reports. Nobody's asked for those reports. And my partner and I, who was actually a rocket scientist, basically told him, well, nobody's asked for these reports because they don't know about this. And so he was adamant that he wasn't going to allow them to be written. And my partner basically went to the Pentagon and said, would you like information on this? And they said, oh, yes, and demanded that we be able to release the reports. So we did that, and it engendered a 100 or 200-man program whereby we essentially got rid of the threat, shall we say. And so after all of that took place and the invasion went well, and by the way, I was told by management that they estimated that the report series, the 6 months report series, had engendered such a reaction from us that we apparently saved probably about 2,000 lives or more during the invasion. So I was very happy to hear that. And awards came out in 2003, and by 2004 I was being told, well, your work was so important, you could probably expect a promotion. So I was rather happy about that and waited. And the next year came around and I was passed over. In fact, my branch chief told me she had put me in for promotion, and one of the people over her had actually tweaked my resume because she said you were too humble in the way that you presented what you did, mm-hmm. and so she needed a little bit more overt. And then after that, I was removed by somebody over my branch chief and told, you know, you're not being promoted this year. And so I was disappointed, and so went back to doing the regular, you know, type of work and got awards for a different project. And by 2005, a Weapons of Space Promotion Board member came to me, and she said, and this was, her name was Lori, and she said to me, she said, Karen, during that project that you were on, she said, who did this, this, and this? And she enumerated certain things, and I said, well, each of those things I did except for one, and that was done by my partner, who was a technical person. And she shook her head and rolled her eyes, and I said, what's wrong? She said, Karen, the head of Weapons and Space and your technical director basically went to the promotion board last year and told them that a different person entirely had done everything that I just said. And that person's name was Rita. And she said, what did Rita do on the project anyway? And I said, Rita did not a thing, not anything on the project. And so I was very disappointed, and I was rather shocked. And that was just such an incredible betrayal if it was true. And I thought, well, maybe it's not true and she's mistaken. I started asking questions, and the technical director accused me of leaking classified information to a newspaper in August of 2005. And I had not the vaguest idea what she was talking about. It was highly technical computer information, and like I said, I translate foreign languages and I write reports. I'm right. Not a technical person. And so at that point, when she accused me of that, I was told to go down and see security and take a polygraph. Well, I got down to security and I was not happy. You know, this is just outrageous.
Now, let me ask you to hold on. You're going down to security, but this has to do with the fact that you discovered a Russian company that was marketing GPS jammers to the Iraqi army or military before the American right. invasion of Iraq. You saved at least a couple thousand lives by helping this issue be taken care of. And now somebody's got it in for you. Somebody didn't like
yes.
that. You were able to connect the dots pretty easily on that. And how can you, trying to figure this out in your mind, here I am doing, I've saved lives, I've helped, I've done this, I should be getting awards. What's the deal here? You must have had, your mind must have been spinning.
I couldn't believe the betrayal. Believe such a betrayal. And of my management.
Right, exactly,
you know?
Yeah. You know, let me do one other thing. This is a little bit off topic, but people think of CIA, NSA people, and to a large degree, DHS employees as being kind of like super people, really talented, dedicated, unique, super soldier kinds of people. And they're not. They're just like, they're people. They have faults, they have problems, they're petty. There are all kinds of limiting issues in their personalities, greed, lust, drive, you name it. They're just people. And yet people have this, generally, the public has an idea that there's something really special about all these people. And there really isn't. Now, there are some exceptions. They're talented. But it sounds to me like we're almost in a soap opera world of revenge, betrayal, backstabbing, stuff that shouldn't happen in these agencies. And yet I get the feeling that it happens all too often.
Well, that was the common complaint at NSA, is that people who were undeserving got promotions for who they knew or favors they had done,
while
the people who worked the hardest were ignored.
Yes, okay, I'm getting that loud and clear. Yeah. Let me ask another question. How much do we need to worry about DHS? It worries me a great deal, and we have talk about FEMA camps and this and that. I don't know if that's true or not. I know they have certainly facilities out there that can switch over to FEMA-type camps if they want. Is DHS a real clear and present danger to our civil liberties here in this country?
I will tell you, I'm not in the least comfortable with that agency.
Okay, good enough answer for me. All right, my instincts are pretty right. Back to the story. You're being overlooked. Your supervisors are seeing this happen. Did any of they come forward to you and try to explain to you how this might be going on, or were they just as stumped as you were?
Well, I think that my supervisor for this project was an Air Force major who was at that point in time deputy branch chief. Now, by the time I found out that my work had been stolen to promote someone else, she had transferred elsewhere. I let her know, and she wrote me a nice testimonial letter saying, this is Karen's work, you know. And so I basically offered to show it to security, and security wasn't interested. What they were interested in was the false accusation. And I went down to take a polygraph, just before which...
What was it? Tell me what the false accusation was again.
It was, the technical director had showed me an article in the Baltimore Sun that was over a... it took up the entire first page and went further. It was talking about NSA computers, and I started to read it, and I said, well, how is this linked to me? I have no idea where this came from. I don't even work this topic. I said, I'm not a computer person. I have not been educated in computers. I don't work this type of thing. How are you
hanging this on me? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, even though she had screamed the accusation across the room as I walked in for the morning, she said, you know, Karen, your article about NSA computers is in the Baltimore Sun. Yelled that across the office, and I walked over. I said, I have not the vaguest idea what you're talking about, you know, and so she showed me the article. I was looking for something like, was the reporter's name Karen Stewart, and she was making a joke, but there was nothing like that, and I started to read the article. I said, I don't even understand this. This is too technical for me. How is this my doing? And then she whispered to me, she said, oh, I'm just kidding.
Oh,
so
real funny.
She screamed an accusation.
Yeah, yeah, this is a total setup. You were being set up. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep. Okay.
So apparently somebody heard it and reported me to security, and the security called immediately and then demanded I come for a polygraph. But later I began to think, you know, it looks like probably security told her to do it, but I'll get to that later. So I go down for a polygraph, and that was August of 2005. And when I get down to take the polygraph, and mind you, I've taken polygraphs, you know, for over 20 years at that point with no problem whatsoever, no question, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get down there, and I'm just about to go into the room with the gentleman. He keeps us standing out there waiting for everybody around us to go into their rooms. And once the hall is empty, he starts to scream at me. He's screaming and threatening me. And just a total verbal ambush, and mm-hmm. then he quits and walks into the room, and I'm left there stunned. And so I walk into the room behind him, and I said, what was that? And he's playing coy. You know, there's a two-way mirror, and there are recording devices inside the room where you take a polygraph. And he's pretending like he has no idea what I'm talking about. And I said, out in the hall, you just screamed and threatened me. I said, what is wrong with you? And he said, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, you know what? I don't want to take a polygraph. not from you and not today, but I'll be glad to come back tomorrow and take it with someone different, or next week and take it with someone different. But I'm not taking one from you because I don't know what's wrong with you. And at that point, he started to threaten me and say that if I didn't take it, that I would be going down to the FBI headquarters and be staying there until whenever. And so I was faced with, you know, being taken to the FBI or flunking a polygraph. And so I decided to go ahead and take the polygraph. And as I thought, I flunked it because I could feel my heart beating, and I was just upset
and confused. Of course. Well, that's why he screamed at you. Sure.
Exactly. That's why. So, you know, I get back to the office, and within a few days, the security polygraph calls me and said, well, you flunked the polygraph. And I said, well, I could tell you that. And I explained what happened, and then I asked to speak to his supervisor. And they transferred me over, and they said, oh, by the way, you have to come back for a polygraph in a month. And I said, okay, that's fine. And I started to speak to his supervisor, a woman named Renee, and she hung up on me. I was trying to tell her that he was doing things unprofessionally and had caused me to flunk the very first polygraph ever in over 20 years, and she just hung up on me. I think she knew darn well what he was doing.
This the fix was in from clearly a high level for reasons that I don't, maybe we'll figure out as we go along with you, but this is pretty ugly stuff when you know people are against you at that level. You probably had the beginnings of feelings of, how am I going to get out of this? You didn't leak that data. This is a complete contrived effort to broom you out somehow.
Right, exactly. No, I couldn't have even leaked that data. I didn't understand it.
I got
been
it.
Like me writing something on brain surgery. But so a month later, I go back and I take a polygraph, and the man behind the desk essentially said, what happened? You've never flunked a polygraph before. And I explained to him, and he said, okay, well, let's take this one. So I took that one, felt like I aced it, and felt pretty good. And then I got a call a week later that said, well, we're calling it indeterminate.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, what does that mean?
Uh-huh.
They said, well, we want you to come back and take a third one. And I said, all right. And so 3 months later, I went back and took a third one. But as I'm sitting in the security waiting room, waiting for the polygraph examiner to come get me, a large man, like a linebacker, comes over and towers over me and puts his arms on his hips and growls at me, so this is the famous Karen Stewart. And I was just stunned. I was like, what in the world is this guy's problem? And so it occurred to me, he's trying to upset me. And so before he said really another word, the polygraph examiner, who apparently was not in on this, came to the door and asked me to come in. And we went to the back hall where the polygraph examination rooms are. And we sat down at the table. And she said, you know what? She said, I've looked over your record. She said, we don't have a problem with you. You've never given us any trouble. You've never had a problem with a polygraph. There's nothing in your background. It's squeaky clean. She said, I don't know what's going on here. And she said, do you mind if we just sit and talk before we do the polygraph? And I said, oh, please, you know, let's do that, you know. And so we actually talked for 2 hours, and that allowed me to calm down because the man had upset me. And
sure.
So I told her everything. And so we went ahead and took the test. And at the end of the test, I was packing up. She was packing up. And she said, oh, by the way, Mrs. Stewart, she said, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but you did pass this test. And in fact, you passed the second one. They just had no idea why you had flunked the first one. I said, oh, thank God. And she said, yeah, I think this nightmare is over for you. And I said, well, great. That's really good to hear. Well, I went back and I decided I'm not working for Weapons of Space anymore. I'm going to transfer out because not only are they trying to destroy my career, but they're trying to put me in prison for something I never even knew about.
Right.
So I went ahead and transferred to yet another directorate where we handled weapons proliferation. So I went there and did some on-the-job training and got along well with the people and the management. And after I'd been there probably at a month or 6 weeks, I decided, okay, I've completed the on-the-job training. I'm comfortable here. I'm going to go to the Inspector General, and I'm going to ask him to investigate what the heck was going on at Weapons in Space.
So you know, this is, Karen, this is, I've got just a minute and a half left here. Let's stop right here.
Okay.
This is a really
okay.
a good, that's a good place to pause, and we'll All have right. you back here soon for an hour or two, and we'll go into this further. And I want all of you to pay attention to this story, and I would urge you to go listen, if you get a chance, to the program a second time before Karen returns, so you'll be perfectly, thoroughly grounded in this. I think you got it, but there's a lot of detail here that's very important. This is a very sad and sorry thing to hear. I know where it's going in general terms, and when you all find out, you're going to be sickened. It's that bad. Just keep in mind George Bush Jr. and his army of secret patriot militia is being used constantly to harass, intimidate, destroy, and destroy the property of, break into people's homes, make phone calls to them, threaten them through intermediaries at work. There can be any number of things. And why do they do it? They're so stupid, in many cases, that they actually believe breaking the law and harming other people is patriotic and they're doing the right thing. But above all, they're getting paid. And it's easy money. And how much money? Lots of money. Anything you want to say, and we'll come back next time and pick it up right here where you're going upstairs, so to speak, with the Space Directorate outrage and try and figure out what happened. Anything you want to add?
Well, yes, I would like to add one thought, and I'm afraid I don't remember the quote, the person who made this quote, but the quote is, the patriot is someone who upholds the principles upon which his nation was founded, not blindly obeys those who happen to be in power.
Good quote. Thank you, Karen. We will continue. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Karen Stewart, and we will continue our conversation with part two as soon as we can get it scheduled here. This is a big story. It's very important. And this whole thing of gang stalking is just stage one. And they have much more vicious means of antagonizing and destroying people. We'll be back in just a few minutes.